This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay, we'll start with the meditation. Start by setting up our posture and bringing up the qualities of the Buddha Dhamma Sangha and our intention, determination to practice. We like to start with relaxing the body, just scanning through the body, becoming aware of the various parts of the body as it is. From the tips of the hair of the head, or the top of the head, to the soles of the feet. trying to have an upright posture to help with wakefulness and relax the body to be free from tension. This kaya prasadi, tranquility of the body. Relax the eyes, the physical eyes. And this intention not to flow after the asavas. This tendency of the mind always going out into the world, into the hindrances. Liking and disliking. Doubting and drowsy. All these things. Worry and restless. I need to get involved with the world. The world is just the world. Put the world down. Give it up. Let it go. I need to flow after the asavas. The mind goes off. We just know it's gone off. And then let it flow back to the present. And force the mind. We just know where the mind is. What the mind is doing. If we have a theme of meditation, we can bring it up. Otherwise, maybe the breath of Buddha, either reciting Buddha mentally, or Bud with the in-breath, Do with the out-breath. Just the sensation of the breath, the nostrils of the upper lip. Just allow the breath to be natural and at ease. We're not tensing and forcing the mind in any way. Knowing the in-breath, knowing the out-breath. Try and get in the groove, try and get so it's comfortable for us. Comfortable to be with the in-breath. Comfortable to be with the out-breath. The in-breath is short or long, rough or smooth, deep or shallow, whatever it is, just have it so it's comfortable. And likewise with the out-breath. Knowing the in-breath is the present, knowing the out-breath is the present. the whole in-breath, bodily volitions, the formation, this kaya sankhara of the in-breath, kaya sankhara of the out-breath, the whole of it. tranquilizing in-breath formations, tranquilizing the out-breath formations. It's Pasadi of Kaya Sankara. Suffusing the whole of the in-breath, all of the out-breath. See how we are after half hour of meditation. How did we go being with our meditation object? Training in our mindfulness. Developing a foundation of peace. I'd like to bring up the qualities of the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. Those who wish can end the meditation. Those who wish to continue to be with the meditation object can also do so. I like the five spiritual faculties, which is a synonym for the Eightfold Path. And it's another version of the Eightfold Path. Usually it's said, you know, once somebody's a Sotapanna, first they have an enlightenment, then they have these five spiritual faculties to develop. I like it because it starts with faith. So in the Eightfold Path, it starts with right view. But, faith. Having faith in what we're doing, having faith in the Buddha, and willing to be a student, willing to develop a discipline. It takes a lot of commitment, it takes a lot of discipline, it takes a lot of hard work. And some people, maybe they have a bit easier because they've practiced before. But at some point, each of us has to do that work for ourselves. It's like if we just aim high and never give up aiming high, that doesn't necessarily we're going to act high. So we have to aim high and act high. And to aim high and act high, we have to know what we're aiming for. So even the Buddha has a sutta just on becoming enlightened by having goals, by aiming for higher and higher rebirth. And then once you have your consciousness at the level of a higher Brahma, then you use that power to let go of everything. You give up all your attachments, even to the Brahma realms. And so, how do we actually have goals? How do we know how to act? This is why we have the Dhamma, this is why we have the Sangha. So the Sangha, like in our Thai forest tradition, we have this lineage of Ajahn Mun. So we have like the example has been set for us. And then the lay people, they associate with those who are ordained. Because as lay people, it's difficult to renounce, because you're surrounded by the pleasures of the sense world. And he's always chasing after delightful sights and sounds and smells and tastes, touch and thought about these things. And so, and the Buddha said it was difficult for a lay person to know if somebody's an arahant or not. So unless somebody actually has a mind that's inclining to renunciation, it's not easy for them to know if somebody's actually enlightened or not. So you can't just trust the ideas that come up in the mind. And so this is why the Buddha had the ordained Sangha and the lay people. But like Lumpur Ted said, really, it's until somebody's seen into suffering. Once somebody's seen into suffering, then whether they're a lay person or a monk or whatever, it's if they see into suffering and they've actually had enough of dukkha, then they're going to practice. And because they want to make an end to that suffering. And they don't want to end up back in hell again. They don't want to end up in a difficult rebirth again. They don't end up in the animal realm again. They've had enough of going around and around. And but that faith in the Buddha's teaching, just to have faith in the Buddha is enough to bring inspiration into the mind. Now you have the six recollections, starting with the recollection of the Buddha. And that's like a banner that we can hold up in our minds. It's just a few sentences long, but one who actually trains their mind to sustain that, to be able to contemplate that, then you know, piti sukha and samadhi can arise just from contemplating that, just from repeating that. And so the Buddha said, even in the household, you know, a busy household with children at your feet, you can develop these things. So, but why we need to associate with renunciance is because the world goes one way and the Dharma goes the other. So those who renounce the world, they don't want to delight in all of those sense pleasures anymore. They've had enough of them. And so even if, you know, music is on or they're in a situation where these things are existing, they're able to keep their mind focused on the Dhamma. They don't get involved, they don't get moved by these things. Where most people's mind is always wanting to delight in these things. And so the more a mind delights in sense pleasure, the more difficult it is for it to actually see the Dhamma. But whether one living by the five precepts, or the eight, or the 10, or the 227, or whatever, it's to do with what we can actually do for ourselves. And what are our goals? What are our actions? How are we actually living up to the Dhamma? So the Buddha has this right view. And so right view starts with you know, the worldly right view, that there is mother and father, there is what is given, there is what is offered, there is ascetic and Brahman, there is kings and princes, there is Brahma and Mara. Like the realms of existence are true, cause and effect is true, karma and the result of karma, vipaka, is true. If you do something, there's a result. You do something, there's a result. And so first, the worldly view, right view, leads to heaven. You know, so like the story of Sakka, when he was the Prince Magga, and he started clearing those paths and doing good, and then the 33 men who followed him, you know, because of their good actions, setting up that inn and being kind to people, you know, the realm of 33 and the heavenly realm was formed. There's a limit to goodness, because as much good as you do, eventually those results will be consumed. And if you attach and identify with that as some kind of permanent self, well, when that state ceases, then there'll only be suffering. And so, as far as the Buddha practiced in his previous lives, even, you know, as a king, if you've got 10,000 dishes of food to choose from, you can still only eat one dish. If you get 10,000 items of clothes to wear, you can still only wear one set of clothes, and so forth. So sense pleasures have their limit. And then all of those good karma that resulted when the Buddha had that life, eventually he fell from that state. And he was in difficult states of existence again. And so karma and the result of karma, that's just the wheel of samsara. It goes round, you know, like in the Dhammapada, the wheel that follows the hoof of the ox. It always comes back to the suffering. Because whatever good we do, if we only do it for goodness' sake, even if we go to heaven, eventually that good karma will fall. Eventually that will be used up. And so what the Buddha teaches is right view on the side of lessening of attachment. So this is where we have the right view of the Dhamma, the right view of the Buddha's teachings. And the Buddha said, you know, empty this raft and travel quickly. And how do we empty this raft? Well, first we need to have right view. So we need to associate with good people. We need to decide what is good action, like the 10 wholesome courses of action, abstention from killing, abstention from stealing, from sexual misconduct, from lying, from harsh speech, from divisive speech or gossip, from idle chatter, from thoughts of covetedness, from thoughts of hatred, from wrong thoughts of wrong view. So we have to always be curbing our mind. Because if those 10 actions we had perfect, we would be an arahant, we would be enlightened right now. So we can see that there is action and there is the result of the action. And the Buddha just said that if we stop doing these 10 things, then suffering would cease. And we would be an arahant, we would be enlightened. So right there in our action, we can see that, you know, this is where we need discipline, this is where we need resolve. This is where we have to build up our parami and our diligent effort and our tireless persistence, that these things are not developed without, you know, sincere determination, sincere effort of really putting up a fight to actually overcome our bad habits and see our blind spots. And so, you know, wherever we're at, this idea, we just have to be careful that we don't just aim high and then act low. You know, so we have to aim high and act high. So we have to know what our actions are of body, speech and mind. And so this is why the basic precepts, an extension of those five precepts, abstention from killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying and drugs and alcohol, it's also gambling, because they're all actions that they're not worthy of emulation. So if somebody ever emulated in any of those actions, no good would come to them, you know. So maybe they were a drug addict in a previous life, and so they see you having a drink and they emulate you. And then so in those five precepts, even though there may be some kind of temporary happiness in them, ultimately they're not actions that are worthy of emulation. And so when people look at the problems of the world, well, actually, if people in the world were moral, then earth would be closer to heaven. You know, the heavenly beings would be more associated with mankind. So rather than people complaining about the world, what we do is we live morally, we live by the Dharma, and then by that, setting up that light in our own heart, then, you know, we're helping guide other people in the right direction. Because it's not by the lower means that the Supreme is attained, but it's by the Supreme that the Supreme is attained. And so it's not easy, just like the Buddha's analogy was like stripping cloth of patchwork. You know, so we have this idea that we have this perfect piece of cloth. And the other thing, like the sealer, is like whiteness. So the more we practice, the recollection for sealer is unbroken, flawless, unblemished, unblotched, freeing, praised by the wise, ungrasped at, leading to samadhi. So, you know, we don't take our sealer and then think, well, I'm better than these people, they're terrible. Because then you're taking your sealer and you're grasping to it. And you're creating yourself suffering by worrying about another person's mind. Or the praise by the wise means that you have to know who is a wise person. You have to be able to have enough wisdom to know who is a wise person. And basically, wise people point back to the Buddha, because one of the sayings in the Majjhima Nikaya is, the Buddha is the teacher, I am a disciple, the Buddha knows, I do not know. Even Venerable Sariputta, who could continue spinning the wheel of Dhamma, he did that out of the Buddha's words. Everything came out of the Buddha's words, you know, because he understood that whatever the Buddha said was true and not otherwise. But because he was foremost in wisdom and practiced for an asankhya and 100,000 kalpas alongside the Buddha, Bodhisattva, in his prior lives, he was actually capable of reteaching the Dhamma in a new way, using what the Buddha said. You know, he was the only one who had that ability. Some could enumerate the Dhamma that was said in brief, in full. The Venerable Sariputta, like the Let's Chant Together Sutta in the Digha Nikaya, where he would recount all of the Buddha's teachings in a simple way. So, but as in the Dhamma, you know, where do we start with these things? Once we have faith, we have right view, and we're focusing on perfecting our action, then, you know, we need the Sati Sampajanya. We need this mindfulness and clear comprehension. And so, like for the monks, they say, you know, the Thai forest thing is eat little, sleep little, talk little, practice a lot. You know, that's like the, if you're ever doing a meditation retreat or really want to focus on your practice, they're the four things. Because if you eat a lot, then you're going to sleep a lot. If you sleep a lot, then you're going to eat a lot. If you sleep and eat a lot, you're not going to have any mindfulness. It's going to be difficult to practice. And talking a lot, well, if you just talk a lot, then the mind will just be filled with idle chatter. And so there'll never be any peace there, never be able to see the Dhamma. So by the time somebody is a Sotapanna, they've at least perfected those first of the 10 wholesome courses of conduct. You know, they could never kill a living human being anymore, or they could never steal anything of value anymore, and so forth. So, you know, it's not easy to develop the mind, but also it's not impossible. What we have to do is just be honest with where we're at and honest with where we're going to go. Because even somebody who's a Sotapanna, you know, they can be lazy. And if you look in the Jataka tales and some of the suttas, which are the precursor to the Jataka tales, there's even monks with defilements who are Sakadagami and stuff. So just because people even attain stages of enlightenment doesn't mean that they're totally pure beings. So we have to really look at what are our defilements now and try and put a fence around them and try and find skillful means to overcome them. Because if we don't do it now, then at some point before we get enlightened, we'll have to face them. And, you know, defilements are no fun. And so usually we have this process of refining the mind. But before you can work with the mind, we've got to start with coarse things. That's why in Thailand, you know, they have the word Buddha. So Buddha is like Sati Sampajanya. So from when you wake up in the morning, when you go to bed at night, instead of thinking, instead of proliferating, you just have this mantra that you say. Like, is it Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, or Keza, Naka, Danta, Tacho? Keza, Loma, Naka, Danta, Tacho. They're like the standard, any of those words, and you just repeat it. And then stick with it. I mean, once the mind has said it a few thousand times, then it gets easier. And then it just becomes natural. And it's a very useful technique because then you know when the mind isn't being mindful. And you have a means, you know, if you're thinking, then you're not doing your mantra anymore. Because when you look at the day, how much of our time are we really mindful? How much of our day are we really actually there, present with what we're doing? So it's very skillful. And some people as well. Useful thing with like Buddha is then when you meditate, then you can take it up as a meditation object and contemplate it. And then Buddha is the one who is awake, or go through the Vittipiso. And so they're just a means of well, the Sati Sampajanya from when we wake up to when we go to sleep. That's going to mean that then when we develop our formal samadhi bhavana practice, our meditation, that we're actually able to stay with our object, actually able to develop the breath. And once we can develop the breath, then the mind starts to refine. And as the breath refines and the attention refines, then we can actually contemplate the Dhamma. There's enough peace in the mind that when we contemplate, the mind will actually stay with it. We can contemplate, you know, the people around us will die, that our possessions will break apart, the buildings that we're in will turn to dust, the politicians will turn to dust. That this is just the nature of things. They arise, they change, persist, and then cease. But if we don't have any peace in our mind, how are we actually going to see them? Or maybe we like to contemplate sense contact. You know, when that the mind's just getting stuck on sights or sounds or smells or tastes or touch, or the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the body of the mind. It's becoming conceited, or it's getting stuck on human beings or wanting some heavenly rebirth, or it's inwardly rotten, whatever it is. You know? So once there's peace in the mind, then whatever the door of Dhamma that suits us, then we can actually contemplate it. Then the more we contemplate, it actually becomes like true wisdom. And we can start to see contact, we can start to see the Dhamma. We can start to see, you know, how we can build up our patience in our endurance so we don't react to feeling anymore. Because happiness and suffering, they're just feeling. Indifference and opaque, they're just feeling. So why should we get stuck on anything? You know, our friends and our family that we're stuck on now. Well, do we know who our family was in our last life? Or 100 lives before that? Do we care about them? So next life, we're just going to have the same habit again. We're going to do the same thing again. And we're going to do it again and again and again. And the Buddha said, as far back as he went, you know, all there is action and the result of action. So if you go back far enough, you don't have any connection with anybody. You know, it's just totally different beings you're in contact with. There's no association with anybody you're even familiar with. So this is the idea of non-self, is that because change is ceaseless, as far back as you go, identification is non-existent. So the only thing there really is suffering and nibbana, you know. And we can see the suffering of the world in hell. Like, nobody wants to go to hell. No, nobody wants that kind of suffering. But this is a result of action, that these things can actually happen. And if people don't believe in hell, then just look at the animal realm. Watch some ants fighting each other, you know. When one hive of ant fighting another hive of ant. You know, you're worried about wars in the world. There's wars going on all over the planet right now in the animal realm. And so, you know, this kind of suffering, it's very hard to get out of the animal realm. And so we use these things to kind of teach us to see, you know, that if we just get stuck in the labels of our world, if we just get stuck in believing all the stories of our modern world, we don't actually see the Dhamma. We won't strive for higher purpose, for higher aspiration. And so we use this faith, we use the spiritual faculty. So we have faith and energy. So if we don't have enough energy, then we're never going to do anything in our practice. If we don't have faith, then we're possible that we'll go in totally the wrong direction. So we need to have faith in the Buddha. And we need to have harmonious energy. And where do we apply that energy? To sati, samadhi and panya. Like Ajahn Chah said, these three go together. So when we have mindfulness directed at the first foundation of mindfulness, or any of the foundations of mindfulness, and that leads to samadhi, and the samadhi leads the unity of mind, the strengthening of that peace, will give the mind power enough to actually have panya, to have wisdom. And that wisdom we know is true because it leads to peace. It purifies the nervous system. It's very different to thinking. Now, the normal thinking of proliferation just leads to agitation. Where the thinking that comes out of samadhi, you know, this is something that actually refines the nervous system. That actually leads to deeper peace, to deeper wisdom. And this knowledge and vision. And when we have enough knowledge and vision, and we have all the causes in the line, you know, that's when the Magasamangi moments can arise, which is like when all the 37 factors come together in a single moment, or the Eightfold Path comes together in a single moment. And in that single moment, you know, that's when path and fruit arises. Basically, somebody will see the gates of the deathless in the distance when they're a certified. And then at the next path, it'll be closer and then closer until the mind is nirvana. And in the Buddha's analogy for that is, what is light that doesn't land on anything? You know? So yes, it is emptiness. It's also light that doesn't land on anything. It's hard to describe. It's that purity of mind that's reached its highest. It's no longer moved by volition of Mara. No longer has the house builder tendency. Everything that is done is finished. The work has been done. But it's indescribable. The Buddha said nirvana is vast, like the great ocean, hard to describe. How do you describe the ocean? Now we've got a few words for it, but it's hardly able to describe what the ocean is. And so nirvana is beyond description. I'll leave it there. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease and all harmful states of mind until I realize nirvana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. Yata varivaha pura pariparanchi sagaram evangi vaito dinam chetanam upakapati chitang patitang tonghang kipameva samijitu sepe parentu sangapa chando panaraso yata manijoti raso yata smityo vivajantu Sabaroko vina satu mate bhavantvantarayo sukhiti kayuko bhavahabhivadana sili sanichang buddha achayino chataro dhammavatanti Ayuano sukang palang.